Okay. Yeah, so welcome to this training, Effective Model-Based Testing, here at Microsoft on February the 8th, I believe. And we will have basically four lectures, interactive lectures. In the first lecture, which is given right here now, we will talk about the application of model-based testing in a space which has been of very high importance for Microsoft, in a mission-critical space. And the idea is to give you some motivation for applying model-based testing. And the application space we are talking about is the so-called protocol documentation testing program. I want to say ahead of time, we will show some advanced stuff during that first session, which may not be immediately understandable without having the other sessions. I will try to skip over that, but the idea is to give you an overview of the technology and what it can do, without the need for digging in deep into the details at this point of time. So don't be concerned if not every of those details which show up in this talk will be immediately understandable. We will come back to that in the later lectures. So let me talk a little bit about the background of the protocol documentation testing of this application. So you may have heard about an initiative which is called Microsoft Open Protocols, which is one of part of the general interoperability initiative of Microsoft. And you find actually a website about that if you go to Microsoft.com protocols, which explains the objectives of this program. And the idea here is that people which produce protocols which should intercommunicate or interoperate with Microsoft products should have documentation which enables them to really make this interoperability quite smooth. So the idea is you can take a documentation of, say, the server message block protocol, which is Microsoft's file sharing protocol. You can take that documentation, you can implement a server, for example, for SMB2, for this file system protocol, and Microsoft Windows client machines will smoothly interoperate with this server, which may run on Linux or some other architecture. And in course of that project, a lot of protocols have been documented. I think we are looking at 220 or 250, and more are coming actually into that program, also from Office and so on. And all this documentation can be actually freely downloaded via MSDN. So the problem indeed is this documentation really the same, or does it describe the same what really happens in the implementation? So this is a testing problem, as we can imagine. It's actually a testing problem which is quite a little bit unusual, because most of the time the implementations already existed and the documentation has been added after it was implemented. So the purpose here was to test the documentation instead of the implementation. However, as you will see when we proceed here, technically, the difference is not really so big. Now, it's just the question, if you find a bug during this kind of testing, is this a bug which you file against the implementation? So the implementation is going to be fixed, or is it a bug which you file against the documentation? So that's actually the only difference. And we are bringing up this this example because it's a real killer application for model-based testing. And as we will see in the end of this presentation, we were also able from that application to get some statistic numbers which prove the efficiency of model-based testing. So let me first talk a little bit more about what is happening in this course of that project. So what first needed to happen is to basically work on the archaeology. We call this in our group archaeology because we had this huge amount of existing protocols dating back to, I don't know, Windows NT was, I think, not inside, but after Windows NT, Windows 2000, and so on. And they needed to be all documented, so we needed to catch up with that. No? So the program is still running at this point of time, but it's a little bit smaller than during this archaeology catch-up phase. And during that phase, which was called Blue Line internally at Microsoft, we had about 222 protocols or technical documents for that protocols which needed to be tested. And that translates into about 22,000 pages of documentation which need to be verified. And this documentation has been converted into testable requirements, and we will talk a little bit about the process, how that happened. And the number of testable requirements which have been actually executed by using test suites is about 36,000. Now, if you look at this number, it is not the case that we applied model-based testing to the entire space here. And that's actually, in a sense, good because we have a very good comparison ground now. We applied around 69% of this 36,000 requirements were tested using model-based testing, and about 31% were tested using traditional testing, traditional test case design. All of the testing, by the way, I'm talking about is automated testing, the model-based as well as the traditional testing. Automated means people write test code in the traditional case, and there is some, you know, some test harness which executes the test automatically and can reproduce the testing. So because of this kind of, splitting of approaches between these two approaches, we had an ideal test bed to actually compare model-based testing against traditional testing. The same kind of people were doing the testing work in the same problem domain. And yeah, the numbers will be shown later which come out of that. So the amount which is spent just in this phase is about 250 person years of testing work, which is quite a lot. And the work was outsourced, so to say, that was actually kind of a methodological dimension also, because the people which produced these test suites from the documents should do it in a kind of clean room approach. That means they should not have any prior knowledge of Microsoft software, because producing the test suite was like simulating a third party which uses the document to actually implement a product from it. And so that's another interesting dimension. It was not the case that we had some, you know, some highly educated PhD-like whatever testers inside of Microsoft, some elite of testers, be able to apply model-based testing. It were really normal folks which applied that, and it happened in Hyderabad and Beijing. Okay, so let me go a little bit into the process which we applied, which is actually a generic process which can be used both for model-based and traditional testing. However, an interesting aspect which we learned during this project is that a lot of influence came from the model-based testing, from the methodology of model-based testing overall, which also influenced the traditional testing. So how did the testing work? So we call this a test-driven document quality assurance, I think a notion which is new, which we invented. So you may have probably heard about test-driven software development. In this case, we call it test-driven document QA. And the idea is we have this technical documentation, and we want to go to a test suite which represents what information which is found in the technical document. So, and the idea is also that doing that, we validate the consistency of the technical documentation. Now, this is, I talked about this clean room approach. This is this idea that when you try to write a test suite from a document, it's quite similar when you try to write an implementation, because you have to understand what the system is actually doing. So it's a kind of validation, and it simulates the implementation process. And the way how it worked in detail is that the technical document was taken, and by human document study, the normative statements out of this technical document were extracted. If you know a little bit about RFC, you know, this kind of internet protocol documentation thing, there is a certain language in this kind of standards. It's similar like a standard. The server must do that, no? And the client may respond like this, and so on. And that's what we're talking about if you talk about normative statements. This kind of sentences, they were extracted, were converted into a requirement specification, and then each of those statements were converted from the English representation, it was still just for human understandable, into computer checkable assertions, test assertions. And this happened either using the model-based test approach or the traditional approach. No? For the traditional approach, it's pretty straightforward how we do that. And so we take each of those sentences, and for each of those requirements which are derived from the sentences, we make just one test case. or we make one test case which covers a couple of source requirements at the same time. In the model-based testing, that's a little bit more interesting, and we will see how that works. Before I go there, there's a further dimension of the methodology, and we think this was a major reason why we have been successful. So the problem we were faced with in the protocol engineering team is that we had this huge project which hired many people very quickly because we had to finish this work in a relative short time frame. I talked about 250 man years of effort, but we had only 2 years' time, or one and a half or something like that. So we had at some point actually 350 test engineers working simultaneously on this project, and the problem is how do you manage that? And what we did is we set up a process which we think is generic also for other kind of products, which consists of four phases. So in the first phase, the people studied basically the document in order to understand what the product is about, what the protocol is about. No? And at this point of time, during the study phase, they also thought about the general test strategy, which you derive from properties of the system you are looking at. No? A general test strategy is, for example, whether you apply the modeled or the traditional test approach. And here it's already clear, so it's not the case, and we will probably go to this a bit more in detail, that for every software system you can imagine, model-based testing is the right approach. So there may be some kind of systems where traditional testing may be better suited. So that's why that is a choice which is to be made here at this point. And what they also did during the study phase is create the requirement specification and did some, estimation of the effort. The next phase is a planning phase. And this is basically like if you look at a software system, and so you talk about the architecture of your software system, but a test suite for a complex product also need to have some architecture. And that was designed in the planning phase. The architecture includes stuff like, you have in a protocol, a client talks to a server. So one way to test such a situation is basically to plug off the client and put in a synthetic client, which is simulated by the test suite, and which talks with the server. No? So this is one approach. Another architecture is to let the existing client and server talk to each other and have a monitor on the wire and listen to what they are saying and verifying the results of that. No? And also scenarios and other stuff for the testing were developed in the plan phase. And finally, the test design phase came where you either, in the model-based approach, now really start in refining your model. Probably a model existed already earlier. It's a kind of a prototype. But in the design phase, you really get serious with your model. And if it's a traditional approach, then you do a traditional test case description. And there's another thing which is pretty important, which we will not talk so much about this in the next 2 days, is the so-called test adapter design. Because when you want to automate testing, one of the very significant problems here is how actually do you access the system under test. This can be quite complicated if you look at communication protocols. How do you get the data on the wire, and how do you get the data back from the wire? So this is something which, at least with the current state of technology in model-based testing will not take away from you. It will be still there. And finally, the final phase, the test code generation, execution, test logs, reports, and so on. Now, what turned out for our application is very important is that we had for each of these phases like a review. And so what happens is that, as I said, we used testing teams, vendors in our case, which did the testing work for us, but eventually Microsoft is responsible for the result. No? But it also applies if you are managing a small testing team, it's actually quite similar. No? So you have a couple of testers which work for you, and eventually you are, whatever they are doing, you will be responsible of what they are doing. So in order to monitor this, we set up in each of those four phases, at the end of each of those phases, a review. the review was a little bit formalized by telling what the reviewers should look for. And the review could be like pass, you know, like you know, you have a test, something like that, or repeat, no, do again, or pass but with change requests. Accept, conditional accept, re-review, yeah. Okay, so that's what we did here. Now I want to talk a little bit more about how we verify that the test result is okay. And again, this is applying both to traditional and model-based testing. However, we had the idea from model-based testing. So a lot of things which are happening in the generic process were influenced by that. No? So what we did in order to be able to measure actually the test coverage, we did not look at implementation coverage because we did not do implementation testing. We looked at requirements coverage. And so I talked before that from the documents, all these requirements were extracted. So each of those requirements get an identifier. And what you do now is in the modeled case, at the point in the model, which we will see later in the example, where you capture supposedly this requirement, you insert a particular statement in the model code. And this is then, here in the model or test design, automatically processed by Space Explorer to be included in the generated test code. And when the generated test code executes, in turn, logs are created. And from the logs, we can actually see which requirements had been covered. So we, but after executing a test suite, we kind of had a proof of the coverage of this test suite regards the original requirement or document. Okay. This is just to give you an idea how such a requirement specification looks like. And, you know, in an ideal world where we would do software engineering like academics proposes or so, we would have started with something like this before we ever created a product, no? But in the real world, the process is just a little bit reversed. So this is TSCH. I don't even remember for what this acronym stands, but it's time scheduling, I think. It's one service, one protocol inside of Windows, which allows you to start and stop certain jobs at certain times and so on. No? And yeah, so let's just look at the first one. So the client must set the file version field of the fixed D-length data structure to 1. No? So this is this kind of requirement. And this is a typical kind of requirement, and we have a lot of them. So you see on the numbering here, so this is already number 1,335. So a document which, like this one, which I think consists of about 150 pages, easily creates 1,000 of set requirements. Okay, so that's a little bit about the background, where we come from and where we applied model-based testing. I want to tell something because I don't have a slide about this. The real background of the technology we are talking about is actually Microsoft Research, so the tool. Spec Explorer was developed inside of Microsoft Research, and it was actually taken over, bought in, so to say, by Windows organization in order to solve this particular problem at hand. And so the technology moved, that was about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, from Microsoft Research into the Windows organization. Also people moved, like Nico and me, from the research context into the product context, in order to apply this technology here. So the actual background is of model-based testing is not just this protocol testing we are talking about, but it has a much longer history. It goes back to 2001 or so. If you are interested in this, on my blog, you'll find an article about the history of Spec Explorer. Now let's talk about model-based testing in general and how we apply it here in this space. So the idea of model-based testing is actually quite simple. So we have a set of requirements that can be written down like we did in the protocol testing space, but there can be also like this famous cloud. So they are not really formalized, so they are kind of scattered over various documents which have been created during the design phase. or they're just in the head of the people or on some whiteboard pictures. And now the idea is a human being comes there, and an intelligent human being, and converts his requirements into a model. And the model tries to describe what the system should do on a rather high level of abstraction, and we will see in the afternoon a little bit more about modeling in general. Now the point is that in order, or while you are just doing that, converting your informal requirements or English requirements into a model, you already do a lot of validation. Because there were previously there were just some ideas that can be inconsistent. No? Now you are trying to formalize this in some way, so you find problems. No? And there is a famous thing which our test architect Keith Stobe always likes to cite at this point. One problem when we rolled out model-based testing inside of Microsoft was that some of the model-based testers did not formally find so many bugs like expected. The reason was because they found the bugs before any test code ever executed. And the way how management measures testing is about the bugs you have filed and which have been fixed by a developer, but not the things which you talk to when you walk over the floor to the developer and tell, hey, I tried to derive the model for this thing or the PM or whatever, and I figured out there is something inconsistent. No? So the bugs which are developed or discovered very early on, they are not measured usually in the statistics. So that's what's happening here in this phase. Now the next step is once you have done the model, and the Spec Explorer tool gives you many ways how you can analyze this model, you generate your test suite. And generally speaking, the test suite consists of two things which I've actually merged together but conceptually can be seen independent. The one is the inputs which are provided to the system under test, which are derived from predictions which the model does about the potential behavior. And the other is the expected outputs which are belonging to that inputs. This is also called the test oracle. And there are a couple of model-based testing approaches around just to position us a little bit, which basically only generates the inputs. The test oracle is still something which you need to implement. So you just use model-based testing to derive some possible input sequences. Spec Explorer here is very different. In Spec Explorer, the intention is to really have both the potential inputs and the expected outputs, so the test oracle, to say, in this generated test suite. And then what happens next is you use basically the inputs to control the system under test or the implementation, and you get some outputs, and you compare them with the expected outputs, and you get a verdict, a test verdict, which tells you whether your implementation conforms to the expectations, how they have been fixed in the model. Now, as I said before, if there is a problem in this testing, to which side of the thing you actually file the bug, that depends on your context. No? Normally, or again, in an ideal world, where your software was developed from well-defined requirements, you would file the bugs against the implementation. In the not-so-ideal world, or in the reverse engineering world, which we did with the document testing, you actually file the feedback against the requirements, or the document. But there is also another error which we should not neglect here. So indeed, while you are converting requirements into a model, you can also introduce modeling errors. So sometimes the model may be also simply wrong. So there is no silver bullet here indeed. No? So even though model-based testing, we claim, makes it much simpler to test systems, you will not get correctness automatically. There is still something which you can do wrong. And for that reason, as we will also try to explain in more detail in the next day, Spec Explorer has a lot of ways how to analyze a model, to visualize a model, how to show you, give you confidence that you have modeled what was intended to model. Okay, so if you look at the process, and indeed there can be different ones, but that's, I think, the most generic one which we figured out and also applied in the protocol documentation testing, looks basically like follows. So we're gathering the requirements. No? So that's where it starts. So let's suppose that is done. Now you have two independent branches which are actually way how you can parallelize the activity. And in many of our test suites productions, that was actually happening. There were two teams. So one team, which is responsible for doing the adapter stuff, the code which also many people call that automation, actually. You know, so the code which automates your system under test. And the other team, which is responsible for actually defining the model and generating test suites. And in our case, we were actually able to partially generate some of this adapter stuff from documentation. This may not apply to all cases. Okay. The interaction or the interface between those two worlds is what we call actions. And we will talk in the afternoon a little bit more about that. So the actions, there is actually the notion action-oriented testing. There's a famous testing book. I forgot the author about this. There's another notion of keyword-oriented testing around in the testing literature. This is all related. The idea is you abstract what your system under test does in a couple of actions which you can invoke on the system under test. And some of the things of the actions are actually also responses or events which come back from the system under test. And that once you have defined the actions, you can independently proceed by defining the model based on that actions and defining the actual implementation of that actions in terms of the test adapters. Now, let me give a brief breakdown of the Spec Explorer technology, like we will see it in the next couple of days, 2 days. So the core of modeling in Spec Explorer is what we call model programs. There is no fancy new language which you have to learn, modeling language, whatever, with mathematical symbols and all that stuff, like some other modeling approaches, or actually even modeling approaches I have been also responsible for like 5 or 6 years ago. So we just use C-sharp as a modeling notation, and we're defining with C-sharp what we call, now it sounds a little bit esoteric, guarded state update rules, but it's actually quite simple when you look at it. So we use C-sharp to define rules which describe under which conditions the state of your model makes an update. And each of these rules is associated with an action of the system we are describing. And we will see that extensively. What is important when we define these model programs is the state on which the model program is based. So it's a state-based modeling approach. And here it is pretty important that we extend by far the capabilities you find with finite state machine testing. Or this approach is, so the state is not just, you know, an enumeration like I'm currently operating, I'm currently initializing, I'm currently shutting down or something like this. It's a complex programming state. It consists of objects, collections, whatever you need to describe the system. In fact, which is not to many people so visible, and we have not made this prominently available in Spec Explorer right now, the way how to write model programs is actually language agnostic. In theory, also VB could be used, or F-sharp, or C++ if it's a managed C++. But the way how we have used it right now is most of the time C-sharp. Now, the other component, so we talked about model programs, the other component which is of essential importance is what we call trace patterns. So if you have already looked a little bit in Spec Explorer, what we mean is this CORD language, where you can define quite declaratively this kind of things. I first expect action A, and then I expect action B, and then from then on, dot, 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 can anything happen, whatever is possible in my system. So these patterns are a little bit like regular expressions over the sequences of things which are supposedly potentially can happen in the system. And this is a very important thing to deal with the problem of state explosion, which we will tackle tomorrow, Tuesday, in the third lecture. And I drop a few more notions. So combinatorial interaction testing, pairwise testing, so another important aspect of Spec Explorer is, so you have these actions, you know, of your system, and it has many parameters, and you want to try out all parameters, but if you look at real systems like we have in the protocol space, you have, say, 6 parameters, and each of them has so many values, then you get a huge explosion of parameter combinations. And there is this nice and smart technology of pairwise testing, and the general approach to pairwise testing is called interaction testing, which allows you to prune this parameter explosion, and we will go on that, I think, also in lecture number 3. Now, the idea is, and I think the rest I show you just of this sub-bullet, I just show you in the demo. And the entire thing is integrated into Visual Studio 2010. In fact, it's also integrated into Visual Studio 2008, but as we are moving forward, Microsoft going to ship Visual Studio 2010 soon, we will probably not continue to develop new features, or not probably, we will not continue to develop new features for the 2008 version, but only for the 2010 version, which gives us a couple of nice improvements which we want to exploit, or Spec Explorer. So that's the idea of the basic tool technology. And just to give you a look and feel of what I said before, we don't need to look in the details of that Windows. So what happens from the process, so you define your C# model, and then you call what we call exploration. That's where the name Spec Explorer comes from. So what is exploration? Well, exploration is just a particular way how you execute the model program. Instead of a normal program execution, you know, you execute, you start with some given fixed parameter set, you execute from the beginning to the end. But in Spec Explorer, because of different potential parameter combinations you can have and different things which can happen in the system, you not have only one execution pass, but many potential execution passes. And that's what we call exploration, exploring all these potential execution passes which you have described in your model program. Now, the way how that works in Spec Explorer, you have a kind of a feedback loop. No? So you start with the model program, you explore it. Now, what I talked about, the analysis of the model comes into the place. We actually visualize the exploration result as a graph. And typically, you will look at that graph, and you can interact with the graph, as we will see, and you will think, okay, so maybe that's actually not the right way how I modeled it. So you go back to your model program, you change it, you explore again. It's a feedback loop. No? And finally, when you are happy with what you have modeled, you generate your test suite. And the test suite can be also graphically represented, but it's also represented as test code, which is by default representable in Visual Studio test tools, in the unit test representation of Visual Studio, but it can also target other test tools like NUnit, or you can even connect to your own testing infrastructure, whatever that is. And now, in the instance of where we use VSTT, what you will do is with this test code, you will just execute it and you will use the features which are included in Visual Studio test tools in order to analyze your test result, have logging, and so on. So that's the general picture of the process.